Back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I got old Camden Yards behind me here. This guy knows his way around here, and the Yankees have been coming in here cleaning our clocks for going on 29 years now, or in the 30th year in the anniversary of Camden Yards. Michael Kay's been in for a bunch of those. I remember back in the early 90s when it was flipped the other way, and then the switch hit. And then the Yankees win. Michael Kay's here because he wrote a book. It's called Center Stage. And as much as the background, man, a newspaper guy becomes radio broadcaster, baseball guy, and then has what we call here wise conversations now, intelligent conversations up in New York. Michael, it's great to have you back on. The Orioles are in last place again, so I don't want to talk baseball.
Okay, I got you.
Well, I mean, the book is an amalgamation of like intelligent conversations. And I think that that's what we talk about here. Maybe talk a little bit about how the transition happened for you from sports to talking to people about real life. Lord knows real life's gotten in the way the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure, Nestor. Well, when they started the Yes Network, John Filippelli was the guy, and he's still the guy, who put the whole thing together. And he was sitting in a diner. And he was trying to make out the shows that would surround the Yankee games. And one of the things he wrote down on his cocktail napkin was inside the Actor's Studio for sports. And that became Center Stage, you know, an hour with A-list guests. And you know, Nestor, if you sit down with somebody for longer than 5 minutes, you make them feel comfortable. It becomes a conversation, not an inquisition. And people really open up. And we found that over the 20 years, 240 guests, that's exactly what happened. And I love doing the show. The quality of guests is just amazing. I have nothing to do with it. But the bottom line is we've compiled the 35 best interviews over the last 20 years, and we put them into a book.
So when you want to have this interview, when you start this thing, when you reach to any number of these people, Bill Parcells, Jerry Jones, Chris Everett, any Red Auerbach, any of these legendary people you've interviewed with, when I retired in 05 the first time, I called them Barbara Walters sit-downs. You know, I sat down with Art Modell. I sat down with Art Donovan. I sat down with Cal Ripken, who was about to go into the Hall of Fame. His career was over. And I tried to have these sort of retrospective things. And when I sat down with him, I think I may have used the same thing. Like, I want to sit down and talk about your life's achievements, you know. And for you, what do you say to them? What did the press release say to A-Rod's agent? Like, hey, we're not just going to be talking baseball on this thing here, because I think the forward for anybody like you or me who's been doing it a long time is that's a sports talk with a sports guy.
Well, you know, what we said was it's really the arc of their life. It's not a gotcha show. Now, if we get something out of it, we get something out of it, because sometimes people let their guard down, but I'm not looking to do that. It's so funny you brought up Barbara Walters, because when we had on Larry David, he's one of my top two interviews that I've ever done. You know, I started asking him a question that, you know, was going to tug at the heartstrings. And he just laughed at me. He said, are you trying to be Barbara Walters? Because nobody gets me to cry. Nobody. So it's that sort of deal. I'm not trying to make people cry. But sometimes when people reflect back on things, they do start to cry. And I think it's riveting for the audience. It's funny because I think television executives now think everybody wants everything instantly. It's like a microwave society. And that they don't want long-form interviews. I think they're wrong. I think people love long-form interviews because you really get to know the person. If you see somebody on The Tonight Show for 7 or 8 minutes, you're not really getting to the bottom of what they are. But if you see somebody on a long-form show, like what Bob Costas used to do and which he's bringing back on HBO, I think you really get to know the person better.
Michael Kay is our guest. The book is Center Stage. His most fascinating interviews from A-Rod to Jay-Z. And I used to read the Playboy interviews. And, you know, they would the author would say, I spent 3 sittings with Ron Howard on the set. And it would be like, we spent 12 hours. And it was all pushed down into a Q&A that I could digest in, you know, 18 minutes worth of reading, or from an old newspaper guy, eh, give me 80 to 100 inches of column, you know, space. We'll let you stretch out in the Sunday magazine feel of this. How scripted is some of this from your perspective? I always say when I have you on my show, I don't green room anybody, because the best stuff gets left in the, hey, how you been, Mike? How the Yankees? And then you get into a conversation. When it comes down to doing something that was structured for television, probably a little bit different than calling a Yankee game or just doing sports radio, right?
Oh, totally different. It's a totally different skill set too. And what we did, or what we do, is we book a guest, and now, you know, we have a couple of producers on the show, and they send me, like, I'd say anywhere from 600 to 800 pages of research. So I end up reading all of that. And what we do is we put together a skeleton interview, because it's 8 segments and we just want to have some structure. But, you know, if you're going to do an interview the right way, you got to listen to what somebody's going to say. So I might have questions prepared, but I go off on them.
I never have any idea where a segment's going, dude, ever, never.
No, and you shouldn't, because if somebody's answering your questions and you're listening and you could follow up, then the thing goes in a completely different way. And that's what we do. You know, it's free form with structure, if that makes sense, because we have to know where it's going to end, you know, where we're going to take it. But for the most part, I have questions prepared, but not, most of them are not even used.
You've been at this a long time. I mean, back in the early 80s, I started at the News American in 84, the Baltimore Sun in 86. I went into radio in 92. I was not a radio listener. I listened to The Grease Man. Yeah, I listened to, like, morning, not shock job, but stuff that made me laugh, topicality, whatever. I was not a sports radio listener. There was no sports radio. After ball games, was taking phone calls, Rex Barney here. Give me your pathway on what radio is and taking phone calls, because I tired of it. I started it in 91. By 05, the internet, I had had enough. I decided that I wanted to have intelligent conversations. I came back on the radio 7 years ago. People had no idea what I was doing, because I said, I'm not taking calls. I'm just going to put people on and talk to them. And I didn't even know what to call it. 2014, there was no podcast, right? Now that's what this is. What you've been doing, what Lipton did, what Costas did, what Firestone did, we're going to sit down and talk about something because you're interesting and your life is interesting. I think that's cool now. And you were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah. You know, we're really proud of this. And, you know, I do a talk show now on ESPN in New York. And, you know, one of the guys I do the show with, Don LaGreca, he doesn't like taking phone calls that much. He doesn't even like guests that much. And it's funny. It's just a conversation. I think people like to eavesdrop on conversations. And, you know, the guy who taught me that, Nestor, you'll know, is John Sterling. You know, when we did the radio together for 10 years on the Yankees, he said, just make it two guys talking about the game and the listener is eavesdropping on it. And that's kind of what we do. And I think that when you get the best out of a guest, what you're doing is he or she has to ignore the cameras. They have to ignore the studio audience. They have to ignore the fact that it's going to be on TV. And it's just a conversation between the two of us. And that's what I do in everything I try to do. You know, Mel Allen gave me that advice. He said, don't broadcast. He said, make believe. Who's the one person that, this was a long time ago, that listens to everything that you do? And I said, it's my mom. He said, okay, here's what you do. Make believe you're broadcasting to your mom. He says, if you broadcast to one person, then every single person that listens is going to think you're broadcasting to them. And I think that's a really good bit of advice.
Michael Kay with some great life advice on how to interview folks. He's done that. Center Stage is the book. His most fascinating. All right. So I'm taking notes here as I go down. You said my top two. I'm not going to let you get away with that. You give me top two. You gave me one. You got to give me the other one, Mike.
Well, Larry David was number one. And number two was Mike Tyson. Nestor, it was an event.
When was it? Because that would tell me a lot, because that biopic he did with the humor and all that, like, he's had phases of his life, literally, right?
It was before that. And this is where it turns phenomenal to me. We did the interview. He sits down. It's an hour. And he's, during the interview, he's crying. He's laughing uproariously. He goes between happy and sad.
Was he medicated?
I think he was, you know, I think he was potted up, to tell you the truth, because okay. I could smell from the dressing room. The audience is on the edge of their seat.
It's not a drug, it's a plant.
Yes. it was the sort of energy. There are people sitting on the edge of their seat. I thought I was going to get hit, whatever. Anyway, the show airs. And listening or watching the show the night it airs was Spike Lee. And the show ends, and he picks up the phone call. He picks up the phone, and he calls Tyson. And I didn't find this out until 2 weeks ago, so that's why it's not even in the book. He calls Tyson, and he says, that's a Broadway show. That's a one-man Broadway show, what you just did. And that's what Mike Tyson on Broadway became. And Nestor, the thing that stinks is somehow they moved me out of the equation. I wasn't
born. You didn't get your 12% on that, did you?
Not even 1%.
Well, you got a good story to sell the book, I would say, Michael Kay. Wait, tell everybody what you're doing now. Like, I, you know, I am out of the baseball thing. I mean, Angelos took my press pass back in 2006. I led the Free the Birds walk out. I was right. He's still wrong. He's eating pudding. The team's in last place. I'm going to Bowie this week to watch baseball. It's been such a strange journey here. You know, you've come in here and you've seen it with 3.6 million people. You've lived this thing in New York now with football, baseball. Even the Knicks are good again. The Nets are playing in Brooklyn and play. You know, Trotz is trying to bring a cup back out onto the island, right? So sports is back here a little bit. Give me a little like journey for you. I mean, you've been at this a long, long time, and I know things change. I mean, I remember when Francesa went through the conflict thing in New York 15 years ago and just talking about conflict and what broadcasters want and what the world wants. I think a lot of us are conflicted in the journalism space about what we used to do and what we're going to be doing anymore, no matter what it is.
Now, it's kind of funny because I walk a tightrope, you know, because I do the Yankee games on the YES Network. I've been doing it for 20 years on TV, 10 years before that with John on radio. And I do a talk show for 4.5 hours a day, Monday through Friday on ESPN in New York. And, you know, you got to criticize, you know, Nestor, you can't sit there and be vanilla about it. You got to give an opinion, all about opinions. And you're kind of serving two masters in that way. But I enjoy the talk show. You get a real feel on what matters to fans. You really understand what the big deal is, and you know you can concentrate on that stuff, and then center stage as well. So I've got my plate full, and I got married late at 50 years old, so I have a 6- and 8-year-old. So every day is full of something, I'll tell you that.
Well, I would think that what you're doing here, your kids, once they get of that age, not just the book, but going and hearing intelligent conversations with people at this point, they wouldn't be pulling out the tapes from you taking a call from Joe in Poughkeepsie, you know, right?
Well, I hope you're right. Obviously, all of these, you know, the book puts it into print, the 35 interviews that we chose, and the YES Network has built a new website, and every single center stage is there if you call it up, all 240 of them. So that leaves a little bit of a footprint as well. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, when I'm long gone, if my kids want to call up one of those interviews, I'll be proud of what I've done. I mean, I like these long form interviews for sure.
You know, guys like you and me were, you know, the hot take business and like all of that, when we've built lives around this. Art Modell said to me back when I first met him at the top of a building. He was kicking the dog, you know, barely even had the name at this point. He said to me, "Young man, don't ever be afraid to criticize me. If all you ever do is praise me, they'll never believe a word you say." And the world doesn't work that way anymore, does it, Mike?
You know, it should, though. And, you know, I've answered this question a lot over the last couple of days. I'm critical of the Yankees, especially the way they're playing this year. It cannot be. And everybody goes, "Well, aren't the Steinbrenners upset at you?" No, because going back to George Steinbrenner, Nestor, he realized if you're going to criticize somebody, then they will believe when you say something's good. But if you put lipstick on a pig and all of a sudden you're saying something's great, why should they believe you? So there's got to be a range. You've got to tell the truth. I think that people in this business, when they tell the truth, they're appreciated more than someone who just like blows smoke all the time. I'm just not that sort of person. I couldn't do it anyway, even if they didn't allow it. But, you know, the Steinbrenners are pretty cool about it. I've been pretty harsh on the Yankees all year this year, and not a word, not one word from them.
Michael, you've written this book and you are the harsh critic. I want you to bring some New York to me right now, because I had my press pass taken away 15 years. I'm not allowed in the building for speaking the truth, which was the truth, as you know, the truth to be. I find it fascinating you keep your gig, you know, amidst this with Steinbrenner. I think New York's a different kind of market. Cosell, Reds, you know, there's a different level of expectation than this sort of Pollyanna bullshit that happens in other places. Give me your take on the Orioles. He can't fire you. They're not taking can you imagine having your last name be Aparicio, be here because of baseball, see this thing get built here, watch it, and then you've come here for 30 years to witness this. What do you make of the Orioles?
You know what? I look at it as a potential jewel. That stadium still holds up beyond anything that's been built. It was the forerunner of all the new ballparks, and it's gorgeous. I know the Yankees like playing there, and I love the town. I really do. I think that what they're doing now really is disgraceful. Because what they're doing, and Mike Elias is doing the same thing that they did in Houston, where he's from. They're completely obliterating years. Years of your life that you're not going to watch good baseball as they continue to accrue draft picks and save money. I think it's awful. I think it's an awful way to go about business. Even the Yankees have never decided to, okay, let's break this down and start all over again and give people 4 or 5 years of bad baseball. People still have to pay for this baseball. I think it's terrible. I think every town that's done it is terrible. And the fact that it worked in Houston and it worked in Chicago works against what I'm saying. But then it didn't work in Philadelphia with the Sixers, did it? So yeah, I just don't think that you give away years. Those years could be the last years that a fan lives. I mean, you could have older fans, too, to just give away years. The Orioles are in the middle of giving away 4 to 5 years of their existence without even trying to win. I think that's when baseball has to step in. I think it's a disgraceful way to go about it. And you're wasting a town that loves the Orioles. Why should people pay to see this, Nestor? It doesn't make sense.
Michael, I love, you know, talking center stage and all these intelligent conversations we've had, but I don't talk as much baseball around here. Because, like, why would I? Why am I going to call guy? Why am I bugging you and all the Yankees beat writers and Susan calling everybody when the Yankees come in here when the team's 30 games under five? Like, it's gone as a conversation piece. And I've had to change my life because I don't think it's relevant enough. And certainly what Washington has done here and what, you know, the way the market has been fractured at this point. But baseball itself, baseball as on the whole, has nothing for me anymore. I was watching Garceau and Palmer last night. I watched because it's what I've always done. It's not joyous. It's not fun. It's not good. They were getting no hit into the eighth inning through two thunderstorms on Monday night. You know, I wake up to go to the bathroom because I'm 52 and it's what I do in the middle of the night. I'm checking my app to see if they got no hit at 2:15 in the morning because I wasn't staying up. And nobody is. I'm going to Bowie this weekend, and I guess it's the first minor league game I've seen in 15 years, Mike. I mean, I'm not like baseball has lost a guy named Aparicio, who's 52 in Baltimore, who took his whole life around baseball and sports and dedicated. Like, if you don't want me, who do you want? Like, the shifts, the home runs, all of it, it's really not a good product right now, no matter where you are, I think.
I agree with you, and I've said it, and I've said it to Rob Manfred as well. And I think the problem is that you're paying these guys from Ivy League schools to come up with the best way to win games, the most efficient way to win games. And they've come up with it. This is the best way, they think. But they're not entrusted with entertaining. They don't care about the entertainment value. And I think that runs contrary to what the sport is. It's an entertainment venue first. And I know they want to win, and with the way pitching is right now, the best way to win is just to try to hit a home run because you can't get 5 or 6 hits in a row. Base running's off, defense is off, they don't care about it, there's too many strikeouts, and they sit there and they wait for the home run. I think it's terrible. Again, until you entrust another set of geniuses to come up and say, make it entertaining as well as being efficient to win, there's going to be a problem because those guys are not paid to make it entertaining. They're paid to win. And I think sometimes just to win does not make it entertaining.
Just over the last 30 years, since you cut that bumper for me back at the Sports Forum, Budweiser, 1993, and I think you know, Mattingly was on the team at that time. What's happened with baseball? It's just unbelievable, from steroids and drugs to how bad my team has been, and that's, you know, where it is. But all the things we talked about during the – I was on the radio during the strike in 93, 94, 95, saying, man, if they – and the Orioles were the benefactors of that. They had all the money then, and they were signing all the players. Hey, let's go get Alomar. Let's go get Key. Let's go get David Well. Whatever they wanted, they had. I said, but that's not long-term. And football, when it came here in 95, the balanced nature of it and this – the fire sales in baseball and how many markets have been wrecked by it and – it's just a shell of what it used to be on an annual basis for folks. But you don't feel that in New York, do you? I mean, the Yankees and the Mets are still a really big deal there. You know where I feel it? When I have Bob Ryan on and I have Shaughnessy on, and they tell me the Red Sox wake up some days number 4 in Boston. Some days. That's an incredible statement. Where's baseball in New York? It's still a big deal, right?
People love the Yankees and the Mets. The Yankees draw, you know, in a regular season, 3 million people. The Mets about 2.5. And when they win, they draw more. And now the Mets have gotten a boost because they have a billionaire owner who wants to spend money in Steve Cohen. So baseball is a big, big sport in New York. Now, with the Brooklyn Nets just eliminated, people were concentrating on the Nets. The Islanders are still in it. But from opening day to the end of the season, I mean, on the Yes Network, we consistently get really good ratings. I think that what's happened, Nestor, is that baseball used to be the national pastime. I think now it is the regional pastime. I think if your team is good, you're interested, you're watching. But I don't know, like, if a Yankee Oriole game is going to get much notice nationally. So it's strange. It's really odd that it's become a regional sport, because it used to be the national sport. But you hit on something. It's a sport where there's inequities. There are rich owners. There are owners that don't have as much money. There are big cities. There are small cities. In football, there are 32 equal people. I mean, they all have the same salary cap. They all have the amount of money to spend. They can't really outspend each other. In baseball, that's not the case. I mean, the Yankees can outspend the Kansas City Royals. The Mets can outspend the Orioles. And as long as you can have that inequity, you can have teams that aren't on equal footing.
Michael Kay is here. His book is Center Stage. His most fascinating interviews with everybody from A-Rod to Jay-Z. Mike, I scored Springsteen tickets. I haven't been to New York in about a year and a half. I got lucky. I have tickets for next week. It's before 4th of July weekend. We have Heritage Fair here and all these great things happening. M3, we're reopening. Tell me what I'm going to find. Like, my wife and I are trying to figure out whether we're going to spend 2 days or one. Like, I think we're going to drive up because we're not comfortable mega busing or like the way we would normally do it. Amtrak's absurd. Don't get me started on that. The $500 bus ride to New York. We're not doing that. But what am I going to find? Like, from opening close to like, is it going to depress me a little? Because if you walk through Baltimore right now, you could say, doesn't feel open as the way we want it to.
You know what? If you had asked me 3 weeks ago, I'd say, you know what? It's going to be dark and depressing and dystopian. But for some reason, the Knicks were in the playoffs and you turned on the TV and the place was jammed. Everything changed like that. Everything is open. It's like it never, ever happened. Now, I don't know if there's a real wisdom in that, but I will tell you that slowly but surely it's opening. Broadway's not open yet. But for the most part, people are back in Manhattan. Restaurants are open, full capacity, the whole deal. And it happened. It seemed like within one day, somebody flipped a switch and said, okay, we're back to normal.
Mike, we had a lot of darkness and despair. The notion that I'm going to be here and Bruce is going to be there. Hey, you know, I mean, feels a little open for business for me. We got concerts coming back. And the Orioles are in last place. It's another summer around here. Good luck with the book. Thanks for taking time with me. And, you know, come steal our players. Trey Mancini, nice kid. He'd make a nice Yankee, just like Moose did. You know, Moose worked out great for you guys, right?
He certainly did. And I know the Yankees need a left-handed bat. That's for sure. That's the one thing that they're missing.
Cedric Mullins, he'll be available. Send us your young, your poor, your island kids. We'll take them all, man. All right.
All right. Thanks, Nestor, for having me.
Mike, I appreciate you. Michael Kay, the legend. There he is up in New York City, writing books, interviewing A-Rod and Jay-Z while I'm stuck talking to Crack the Sky and Steve Whiteman from Kix. But the Crab Cake Tour is coming in August. We're going 30 crab cakes, 30 days throughout the state of Maryland. And we'll be telling you more about that. You can find me Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, anywhere you are. I am WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.